Our moderator, Laura DeAndrea Tyson.
We don't know what's going on here. The voice of God is speaking. And I think we're ready with that to turn it back over to our panel. I'm sorry to stop what looked like very good discussions, but Laura, it's back to you.
We're delighted to see such active discussions. In fact, we stayed up here and had an active discussion ourselves, our own little table. So we have some very interesting questions, and we've just sort of decided in our limited time we could handle just three. So we're going to handle just three. And I'm going to start with Jennifer again. And there's a lot of questions that ask, how are public-private partnerships formed? Now, we heard some examples from President Kikwete. But I think the organization that Jennifer has helped form is really focused on the issue of how do you get the information out? How do you link the business community with possible opportunities for public-private partnerships? Why don't you talk about that?
Well, I will briefly. I'd like to think of it in terms of gaps. What are the gaps that we're not filling? And clearly one of them is advocacy, and I think the Initiative for Global Development is attempting to fill that, but I invite all of you to participate with me in the room. Second, as we've gone around the country, we've heard from so many business leaders who want to get involved somehow and don't know quite how to penetrate the industry, don't know where to find information, don't know who good partners would be. I think there's a lack of good information, and I disagree with Ian a little bit. I think scalability is absolutely essential. We have to go that direction, but I also think there's a role for businesses of all sizes to play, and that there need to be lots of intervention points and lots of ways to get engaged. So bottom line, I think there's a huge need for information about what's working, what's not, what kind of factors go into a successful partnership. And I think there's a hunger out there for that kind of information. And I think that organizations like McKinsey are far more equipped to do that kind of analysis than we are. But I can tell you that there's a tremendous amount of interest out there in the world. Second, the Millennium Challenge Corporation countries, which have been vetted for good governance, rule of law, investing in people. I know that Tanzania has just been approved for an almost $700 million MCC grant. That presents a very interesting opportunity, I think, for businesses all over the world, but particularly American businesses, where if the logic is correct, which is public monies wisely invested will create private sector opportunities, then I think there's undoubtedly a place to explore here. And one of the things that we're doing actively right now is talking to the MCC about how to promote, how to accelerate private investment in those countries. The third is a gap that I think is being filled here very clearly, but not elsewhere in the country, is to bring our business community together with the strong leaders and strong entrepreneurs from the developing world, not just, of course, restricted to the MCC countries. But, for example, in New York on Friday, Lehman Brothers convened a meeting with President Kikwete to talk about investment opportunities in his country. We're having the president of Zambia in Seattle this coming week, to talk about business opportunities in Zambia. And I think getting more business leaders face-to-face with the government leaders that are really doing the right thing will create some opportunities and synergies that could be very beneficial both ways. So
great.
I'll stop there, Laura.
Great. Ian, small and large businesses. You had a wonderful example of a small of something that scaled, and you were involved in the scaling up. So why don't you talk about that?
I was asked if there are any examples of scaling up. First of all, I would just say absolutely. I see the crucial importance of entrepreneurism and small business. The point I'm trying to make is I think the balance is too much on social entrepreneurship and not enough on what business people call business builders. We've got so many brilliant entrepreneurial ideas out there. If the balance could shift towards more new brilliant ideas to let's scale up what we've got. So I think it's a balance issue, and everyone knows that entrepreneurism is the lifeblood of business. Two examples quickly of scaling up that I know of. One is a public sector one, which is in China. We weren't involved, but by observation and anecdote, but I believe it to be, I'm sure it is true. It's around education in rural areas of China. And the idea happened about 7 years ago, how to bring schools into China. And right from the start was, how do we get access to education in schools, not how do we tackle this town. It was, how are we going to large parts? And the vision, I don't normally use the vision word, was 10,000 rural schools in 7 years. 10,000 schools, elementaries. This is just elementary. It started off government-led in a couple of regions. But then when they'd done that, they had the issue of the capabilities and the capacities needed to do it was beyond the people who'd been doing the tests. And they used and they asked companies to help, and a group of people from one of the large German auto companies and representatives from the Chinese steel company came in and brought their project. These are companies that had been expanding factories massively over 10 years. And they applied their skills and capabilities to what would need to happen in a project basis to generate 9,000 elementary schools across China. This is 5 to 10 year planning. Training teachers, for example, in English and mathematics was one of the biggest bottlenecks. So this was the use of a different type of skill. And they said, we do not want entrepreneurs. We want people who've done large scale project management to say, how can we roll out this concept? Now, in China, they didn't face some of the constraints of governance and that some others do. They just decided to do it. But I think it was the point I want to emphasize is the different types of skills needed. They never use the word entrepreneurs. They use the notion of developers. So that was one example of scaling up. But the key was, right at the beginning, the vision was 10,000 schools, not look at this great story in, you know, Trin 1 or something like that. It was, how are we going to do it? A second specific example, have I got time for very quickly, specific example, which we were involved in, was around healthcare in an African country, where it started off with working in a town. And very quickly, the town mayor, who was very close to the state governor, said, look, can't we do this at a much bigger level? And then the country president got involved and said, we'd like to do this at the country level. And then this is a case of incentives. Then the people said, the private company and the NGO said, whoa, the private company said, this is getting beyond our budget. Frankly, we can't do that. The NGO said, we can't scale it. And so the question was, how could you make that work? And the solution that evolved was, start small, but upfront get agreement that if it worked, that we'd be put in a plant that would provide the whole country. And then the manufacturer said, well, we can't afford to do that unless there's some financial return to us. We are a private company. And the government said, well, we can't afford to pay for it, the classic problem. And the solution was that the premier went to the embassies and then the governments of Germany and the US and said, will you fund or subsidize and manufacture this if this test market proves possible? And they said, yes, we would. So immediately the private company said, we have an incentive. We actually want this to work because we're going to get a commercial contract. The governments rightly, in my view, decided the difference between direct subsidies and direct foreign aid, to me, economically, are not different. It has a lot of political ramifications, not different. But immediately everybody was focusing on the idea of how can we make this a national solution rather than we did great things for 20,000 people in a town. And it all started from thinking, how can we scale up at the beginning and how do we solve the problem if we're successful? There's the other issue, what you do if you fail, and that's going to happen too, and we have to accept that too. There are two examples there.
Two great examples. We discussed, and there are a number of questions here with President Kikwete, his examples of partnerships, and really wanted to pursue the question of whether he feels there's enough interest, particularly on the side of the large multinationals in developing these kinds of partnerships, because as we've just heard, the multinationals themselves can be very, very important in making these things work. So, President Kikwete.
Well, of course, we have a few other examples of multinationals that are interested. Last year, during the campaigns, one of the promises that I made was to intensify the fight against HIV and AIDS. Of course, advocacy is one of the things that we said we're going to do it, and I appeal to the leaders to take the lead in advocacy, because it makes a difference if the leaders themselves come out and talk about it. But then I thought that one of the things that we could do is nationwide counseling and testing. I said we should do this. But of course, this now scale it up at national level, because then I called the minister, the Minister of Health. They said, do they have enough, how much do they have in terms of test kits? They said, I think they have close to 5 million. Then I said, fine. But suppose the response is overwhelming, then that those 5 million may not be enough. So he said, okay, fine, we'll take it up in every budget. We'll allocate funds for that. But we say, let's start try to talk to friends. Then I called the U.S. ambassador. I called him and he came there. Usually when an ambassador is someone, he comes there expecting some of those tough demarches from governments. But here I said, I have a request. I want to launch this program. Can the U.S. government support us? He said, I think the idea is favorable, but let me talk to Washington. Then he talked to Washington, then he came back to us. He said, at least PEPFAR will support you, and there is a host of instruments to support this idea. Then, of course, I went public because I talked also to the other governments in Europe, the European Union. They said it's a good idea. Scaling up the fight against AIDS is something that we need to support you. Then I announced last December, on 1st of December, the International AIDS Day, I said publicly that we are now making plans. Next year we're going to do nationwide counseling and testing. And then we continued to talk to so many other friends, and then Abbott Laboratories came. They said they are going to contribute 1 million test kits. I said, this now looks good. So Abbott is one of those major companies in the medical industry. So you see this interest. And then we launched in July, and I was the first one to be tested. I said, me and my wife are going to be the first ones to be tested. And then the whole thing is now catch up. It's just working. Like, I visited one of the districts recently. There are 181 villages, and they have 181 test sites. So it has worked, but it is this cooperation combination. And then last year when I came here, I wanted to visit Bill Gates and have discussions with him, because we are saying we want now to anchor ICT into our development plans. And I say, how does Microsoft help us? We want to team up to work with them. I met him in South Africa last year. And when we discussed, they said, fine. I said, okay. So we signed an MOU where they're going to assist us with the e-government, in e-government, in e-tourism, and also in e-education. We are building a new university, and in that university we are building a school of virtual arts and IT, and Microsoft is going to help us in a big way from the planning stage to the implementation of the university. So there is a lot of interest. There are many examples of public-private partnerships, and there is a lot of interest. Of course, one of the questions here which I would like to take up is the question that, are we not privatizing government functions? No, we are not. The question is not privatizing government functions. As I said, the issue is complementarity. There are things that government wants to do, but these are very things also the private sector can do. It's only coordination and dialogue between you. Then you realize that also the private sector can do part of this. It's not privatization of government functions. It's just complementarity. It's dialogue. And it's partnership that works very well for us, and I assure it works for everybody else.
That's terrific. I think what this shows so clearly is, talk about complementarity, basically what is required on the public side is visionary leadership, and President Kibweke, you obviously have visionary leadership. So I think that the demonstration that what you bring to the table is the vision of having the national testing, the vision of having a development strategy which incorporates information technology. And then you bring that vision to the people and you bring legitimacy. And that mobilizes both the population and civic society and the largest companies in the world to support you. So thank you very much for your leadership. All right, to the tables.
Over here. Thank you all very much, again, to the panel, but this time especially to the tables. And I want to just review very briefly, and I'm going to go kind of fast, so keep your eye on the slides. In terms of sectors, you all pointed out that skills development is crucial, management skills, including of scaling up, reducing costs, and building markets, that there's a transparency and efficiency required in public sector resource allocation and procurement frameworks so everybody knows how it works, that we need to bring more finance to small and medium enterprises to be able to allow these things to flourish on the ground and then be scaled up. The notion of modeling public funding after a venture capital approach to build a system that distributes resources to nimble organizations. And I think that's a really good suggestion and one that captures what we've heard from everyone. We have in here a lack of U.S. education focus on global development affairs. I'm not sure that's an idea. I think that's a statement of fact. And if anything, I hope that we at CGI can help contribute to that by having people educate all of us. But I think the message there is that each of us who knows about this, we need to pass it on so that we all do know much more about it. Finally, greater collaboration is needed. Create a global directory of partners and a clearinghouse of international standards, success stories, and best practices. This came up in 2005. It came up in 2006. We have a whiteboard out there for table discussions. I'd really like to challenge people, now that this is coming up for the third year, to think about what that looks like. I'm not saying you have to do it. You should. But I'm saying if we can put some flesh on the bones of this, imagine you've got President Kikwete who identifies an area of need in Tanzania, identifies what his government can do, is looking for friends. What is the vehicle to connect all those dots and make that happen? A couple of gems. The NGO community should develop a scorecard or assessment tool that would allow them to be rated against how they had met their goals. I think this may have been triggered by Ian's discussions on governance, quite important. The other one is look at partnership as a process and not as a destination. I think that's really critical. The example we heard about setting the sights high at the very beginning, these are not individual projects. They can be transformative processes. This last gem is quite curious. Create government bureaus to manage public-private partnerships like how the U.S. IRS coordinates 501c3 tax-exempt organizations. Let me say only on that. That I would think that, for example, Mr. President, it would be great if in the Tanzanian government there was a place for this. Right now it sounds to be in your office, which is also a great thing because then people know they've got the top leader behind it. I think I'll just refrain on comment on whether it should mirror the IRS and 501c3s. And by individuals, again, this comes up again and again, contribute your skills. Share your knowledge, find a vehicle to maximize your impact. Also, and importantly here, we haven't discussed it much, use technology to spread these networks and ideas virally. Like, one of the things that's interesting to think about is how could you take public-private partnerships and do more of this through the Internet and virally to connect people who are in far distant corners of the world. Now, I'm going to turn it over to the panel for their final comments, and with great thanks. And just so you all know, if they appear to be going very quickly, it's because they have an evil clock at their feet that keeps going like this. So it's back to you, and thank you all very much for your comments.
The challenge to my wonderful panelists is basically to give about a 30-second to 1-minute response to just to sum up or to respond to some of the suggestions. So why don't we go in the order we're used to here. Jennifer, do you have any responses?
When we started, it was lonely out there. And I think one of the things that's just so thrilling is to see how much this mosaic of voices has really grown. There's no substitute for strong leadership. I think one of the reasons that we've grown the way we have is because who's involved. I think obviously President Kikwete is showing that kind of leadership, but nurture it, grow it. It really moves the needle. Poverty and development need to be a high national priority for our country, and our voice needs to be heard at the highest levels, particularly with presidential leadership. We need to work cross-sectorally And I think Ian had some very good examples of how that can add value. There's a tremendous amount of intelligence and good experience out there. I think it just needs to be pulled together in a way that is more accessible to more of us.
Thank you very much. Ian.
I would just reiterate on the question, I think this focus on skills, but at the granular level, you know, precisely what skills to do what, I would say is absolutely critical. So this focus on capacity, as we used to call it, I think is critical.
Capacity. Thank you. President Kipwete.
Well, I would only conclude by saying, to emphasize the complementarity, public, private, need each other. Let's continue to work together.
Excellent, excellent. Terrific panel. Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much. Now, my wonderful last task here is to invite to the stage John Podesta. John is president and CEO of the Center for American Progress, also an old friend of mine from the Clinton administration. He's been involved in multiple commitments, has been a CGI member since 2005, and has been working with the Center for American Progress to establish a risk insurance fund for small and medium-sized businesses and investors in the West Bank and Gaza. That's just one, I think, three or four commitments he's been involved in. So, John.
Thanks, Laura. Thank you, Laura, and it was just a great and inspiring panel. And, of course, what's really inspiring about CGI, I think, are the commitments that people come here and make, and they always seem to get bigger and better. And I have the honor of presenting three to you this afternoon. The first, I'd ask Yuvan Naidoo to come to the up to the stage with me. Yuvan is the president and CEO of South Africa Chamber of Commerce in America. I was at the in the last session at the table at the end with Yuvan. He said he thought his commitment should really be in the jobs panel. But I think as the president's examples noted, I think you belong right here. The South Africa Chamber of Commerce in America is committing to provide the tools, guidance, framework, and access to resources necessary for African entrepreneurs to successfully launch businesses in international markets, starting with the United States. The value of this project is $500,000. It consists of two parts. The South Africa USA Business Plan Competition will include a multi-stage competition to identify top plans for aspiring entrepreneurs, and the Africa Jobs Accelerator Program will bring together on a quarterly basis stakeholders in the project to assess job creation potential of opportunities presented by African entrepreneurs. For its inaugural accelerator program, over 100 potential American investors have already exhibited interest, opening up a host of possibilities for the first five African entrepreneurs slated to participate in the program. I think sometimes we think of these commitments as providing support to the new entrepreneurs, but clearly this is a two-way street. I think the 100 American investors that you're bringing into the room will have the very good fortune of being introduced to these African business people. And so I hope that some of them go big, as Ian Davis stated, but I know that bringing this network together will really make a big difference. So thank you. Next, I'd like to invite Guillaume Guettereau up to the stage. Nice to see you. Guillaume is the CEO of LALIQUE. LALIQUE is committing to launch Believe, a fundraising campaign that will work to alleviate poverty in developing nations around the world. The goal of the campaign is to help 1 million people by 2012. The value of this project is $1 million over the next 3 to 5 years. Believe aims to reduce the number of people who are in need of food, of water, shelter, clothing, and health. The campaign is going to collect donations from products and services offered by a select group of associated luxury brands. A percentage of the sales revenue from the brands will be shared with an alliance of poverty alleviation charities. Inspiration for this commitment came at CGI 2007 mid-year meeting when Mr. Guettereau took interest in the leveraging power of dollars invested in the developing world, as well as the numerous stories of people whose lives have been changed due to the past commitments made here at CGI. I noted that these discussions are inspiring. The discussion at the mid-year meeting inspired this commitment, and hopefully more to follow. Thank you very much. Finally, get my paper straight. I would like Leah Misbach, the marketing journalist for World Bicycle Relief, and Stephanie Thompson, the vice president of development for World Bicycle Relief, to come up. World Bicycle Relief, SRAM Corporation, Harmos of Zambia, and SEDA of Tanzania are committing to directly empower impoverished people in Africa through affordable access to sustainable quality mobility to benefit their economic well-being. The value of this project is $980,000 over the next 15 months. They're going to use a microfinance program. World Bicycle Relief will facilitate access to 7,000 bicycles to people in Kenya, Tanzania, Ethiopia, Rwanda, Uganda, Malawi, and Zambia. That commitment builds on the success of two very large-scale bicycle projects where 23,000 and 24,000 bicycles were distributed in Sri Lanka and Zambia, respectively. Because of the multiplier effect of that work, at least 35,000 people will be affected by this commitment. I think it'll help all those people start rolling towards success. So we appreciate that.
Thank you all again. A special thanks to John. Many of you think I work for Bill Clinton. Actually, John Podesta is my boss. So thank you for that. And thank you again to our panel and to all of you. Please enjoy the plenary, and we hope to see you all again tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, the plenary begins at 5:30 in the Metropolitan Ballroom on the second floor.